A Tempo is a production of the Classical Network and is made possible by the support of listeners like you. Thank you for your support. Welcome to A Tempo, the Classical Network spotlight on the arts and culture. I'm Rachel Katz, and I'm your host as we explore the changes at work in the performing arts. Each week, I'll bring you some of the latest news and also take time to examine many of the issues that are challenging arts organizations and institutions. Today, we'll hear from the incoming executive director of the Pennsylvania Ballet. I'll speak with Shelley Power, who will step into her role in February, about her goals and priorities for the Philadelphia-based ballet company. I'll also wrap up my mini-series surveying various performances of The Nutcracker in a conversation with Pennsylvania Ballet Artistic Director Angel Correa and Director of Community Engagement, Sarah Cooper. As part of A Tempo, we're pleased to bring you some of the news from around the world of the performing arts. A Princeton University graduate student is among those nominated for a 2018 Grammy Award. Pianist and composition student Pascal LaBeouf, who makes up half of the LaBeouf Brothers jazz duo, was nominated in the Best Instrumental Composition category for his work Alkaline, recorded by his duo and the Jack Quartet. A Naumburg doctoral fellow at Princeton, LaBeouf has previously won the 2015 ASCAP Foundation Johnny Mandel Prize and won first place at the 2008 International Songwriting Competition. A recording by the Pittsburgh Symphony Orchestra received two nominations, its recording of Shostakovich's Symphony No. 5 and Barber's Adagio, conducted by Manfred Honeck, was nominated in both the Best Engineered Classical category and also Best Orchestral Performance. Two recordings of the Metropolitan Opera are vying in the Best Opera Recording category, releases of Berg's Lulu and Bizet's The Pearl Fishers. And among the nominees in the Best Choral Performance category are the recording Breyer's The Fifth Century with the Prism Quartet and The Crossing, and Music of the Spheres with Nigel Short conducting the ensemble Tenebrae. Dmitri Forostovsky, who passed away last month, was nominated posthumously in the category for Best Classical Solo Vocal Album for his recording of songs by Georgi Sviridov. A complete list can be found at Grammy.com. The 60th Grammy Awards will be broadcast January 28th. The New York Philharmonic has named Susan Madden as Vice President of Development and Adam Crane as Vice President of External Affairs. The appointments come as Deborah Borler rounds out her leadership team after taking on the role of the Philharmonic's President and CEO in September. Those are just some of the headlines this week from around the arts world. The Pennsylvania Ballet last month announced the appointment of its new executive director, Shelley Power, who will begin her tenure this coming February. She succeeds David Gray, who stepped down in June. The ballet company, founded in 1963 by Balanchine protege Barbara Weisberger, has seen its share of other changes in the past 5 years. It reopened its ballet school in 2012, expanding into a new facility on North Broad Street that it hopes to develop further. In 2014, the company appointed a new artistic director, Spanish-born Angel Correa. That was followed by on-stage changes, as more than half the ballet corps has turned over as dancers either left or didn't have their contracts renewed. Powers was most recently CEO and artistic director at the Prix de Lausanne, a competition for young dancers, and before that served as administrative and artistic director of Houston Ballet Academy for 12 years. I spoke with her earlier this week about what brought her to Pennsylvania and what her priorities are moving forward.
First of all, it's obvious that Angel is a big draw. I believe that, he's been one of the great dancers. He's had one of a great career, and he is just like a racehorse ready to take off. I'm so excited to see that enthusiasm that, it's a bit contagious. You want to be able to work in a team where people are very excited about what they're doing, that they're very passionate. So certainly that was one of the big draws. The potential of building a new home or expanding the home that they're in certainly is an exciting challenge. When I worked at Houston Ballet and I was part of the building of their new facility, the move into the building brought such pride to the city. It brought pride to the staff, to the dancers, to the students in the school. So I'm really looking forward to getting to that point. But it's not just the outcome. It's really the journey along the road that we'll all take together that excites me. Getting to know the community and education and outreach is extremely important to me. And I'm looking forward to continuing, of course, the programs they already have, but perhaps developing some new ones. But I need to get to know the community and know where the gaps are, because I think that's one of the jobs of arts organizations, to fill those gaps. And I'm certainly looking forward to finding where we, as a ballet company and as a school, can educate the next generation of audience members, dancers, and frankly, help build skills with young children, because I think dance provides that so well. And, you know, I think the organization as a whole right now is ripe for change. It's looking for growth. It's looking to take the next step. So you put all those together, and it's just such a nice fit for me. It's something that I'm really looking forward to doing.
Well, drilling down a little bit, what would you say at this point are some of the priorities that you'd like to help the ballet company focus on and move forward with?
Certainly, it's no secret that, you know, having an organization that's financially sound and the infrastructure is sound and there's a plan going forward is probably my first priority. That is includes the building, of course, within that. But when you're ready to build a building, you've got to be ready to be able to take care of your operation along the way. So that's probably going to be my first priority. I certainly want to get my hands in a lot of other areas, but I think that will be well off focus, certainly for the beginning of my role as executive director.
What are some of the things you feel you'll be able to bring to Pennsylvania Ballet to help move them forward?
You know, sometimes our strengths are our weaknesses, because I am overly enthusiastic and certainly love to develop things. And so I think one of my strengths is putting programs together, being able to evaluate them, and to be able to see them through to actually get them up and running. But I think probably the reason that is easy for me is because I tend to be a kind of a synthesizer. I can take information and listen to problems, issues, goals, and really hear what people are saying. And so I look forward to doing that with the team and then to put it into a plan and then implementation and celebrate, hopefully, all those successes. So I really enjoy doing that, and I enjoy putting strategic plans together. I've done that throughout my career, whether it was my own studio ownership or working as the director of the Houston Ballet Academy, or even and also with the Prix de Lausanne. That I'm really drawn to that, and I think that because I have that ability to do that, it's a nice fit for where Pennsylvania Ballet is right now. And I think that's going to help launch and be a catalyst for a lot of the planning from endowment building to operational fund bills, regular fundraising, as well as to think about this building and continuing the capital campaign. Outside of that, I love to motivate people, and they motivate me. I like that exchange. I think because I have probably matured enough through my career that I've learned to be a leader and allowed people to excel and feel fulfilled and find their way without, you know, helping them along. But it's really giving it to them so they can really experience the successes. So I really enjoy that. It's a nice place to be in my career. I'm not early on entry level trying to, you know, prove myself or make my way. I'm really looking forward to seeing the team blossom and plant those seeds and develop along the way.
There has been a lot of change in recent years, particularly since the arrival of Angel, and that has attracted, as you might expect, media attention and questions. Do you think things are settling down now, or do you expect additional changes in the near future?
No, I think, you know, change is hard on any organization, especially one that's well-established in a city such as Pennsylvania ballet. So I don't expect that there's going to be huge changes other than huge maybe growth and stability. And anytime an artistic director comes in, there has to be change because the artistic directors are hired because of their vision. And so they need a team that's going to be able to support their vision. And I think, though, although that was a rough moment, it certainly was something that had to happen for Angel to realize his vision. And organizations go through this all the time. I think it is tough because you get to know a company, you get to know the dancers. But, you know, I think that most of them are have gone on and have done what they need to do for their lives. And I don't foresee that this is a huge problem going forward whatsoever. I think it's already settled down, and it seems to be. And I think the company is dancing beautifully, and they're reaching the expectations that Angel has. And so now we need to get in there and get the company infrastructure of the organization itself to support that vision. That will be my job. So I don't foresee this as a big problem whatsoever.
Looking ahead to that future generation, what are some of the challenges specifically in the ballet world that are being faced in terms of ensuring that the interest and the attention to ballet is continued and is maintained?
First of all, I don't think we need to be afraid of technology, but we certainly need to be conscientious in knowing that, you know, it can get very easy to sit behind a computer and not experience something, a live performance, and to really have that engagement with other people to talk about it. There's nothing better than the live performance because you never know what's really going to happen. You can watch the same video over and over again, and it gets pretty redundant. So, you know, it's kind of that strength and weakness thing that technology is really great and we can use it in different ways. The other day I went to the cinema to see The Taming of the Shrew and to see the Bolshoi perform. Now, that's a great use of technology because it's a ballet that opened 2 years ago in Europe, and I was getting to see it because I wasn't here, and it was a great experience to be able to watch that whole process of The Taming of the Shrew being put together on stage and then watching the performance. It's a great use of technology. And so I think that there are different ways that we can integrate it and use technology and not be afraid of it, make it a positive impact on future generations. And they're going to come up with all the ideas, aren't they? Because they know how to, you know, they knew how to open up a computer and turn it on probably when they were a year old. So I think that there will be technology will be developing along the way. But the challenge, on the other hand, as I said, the challenge is getting people into the theaters, getting them to see performances. And perhaps it's not going to the theater. Maybe it's seeing a performance in an unlikely place. You know, it's those kinds of spontaneous and unusual things that people are looking for experiences. And I think one of the reasons they are is because if you're sitting behind a computer all the time, you're not engaging and there's a missing. So I would imagine that there could be some very innovative ways to embrace the fact that our experience is quite different than it was 20 and 30 years ago, and maybe even 5 years ago, and be able to, or at least offer different ways to access dance through different experiences, through going to the theater, many different ways, and watching it on the computer if you can't get out. I mean, you know, all those things are important, but we can't let it eclipse the live performance, because that experience is something that, you know, it's happening right before your eyes. You're present. You're right there and in the moment. We just have to make those experiences interesting. And, you know, you've got all kinds of audiences out there. You have traditional audiences. You have more contemporary. You have avant-garde. And ballet companies have changed over the years because they've had to, because people have broader interest. And I think that that's great. Dancers are now can jump from a contemporary piece to a classical piece rather easily and perform it really well. They aren't just stereotyped into you're a classical dancer, you're a contemporary. Now there's a crossover. And I think that only builds audiences and that it's broadening the experience for a lot more people. So I think that we have a lot to look forward to, but we have challenges. Of course, you know, money is always a challenge. Mm-hmm. I think it's important for communities to support their what they want in their city. We can't depend on one or two donors or one or two foundations. I mean, we really have to depend on the people speaking up and supporting what they want for the culture of the city. And certainly Philadelphia has a rich, rich arts culture. So I don't think that this is going to be a hard conversation at all. I think we just need to get out there and be more visible.
That was Shelley Power, the incoming executive director of the Pennsylvania Ballet. Staying with the Pennsylvania Ballet this week, we wrap up our mini-series looking at some of the Nutcracker productions taking the stage this holiday season. Many point to the 1954 premiere of Balanchine's production of the Tchaikovsky Ballet as the start of what has become an American tradition, and it's this version that audiences have enjoyed from the Pennsylvania Ballet. This year, performances in Philadelphia take the stage at the Academy of Music December 8th and include one sensory-friendly performance on December 27th. In addition to featuring young dancers on stage, the production also reaches local youth by partnering with the city's Department of Parks and Recreation, providing an opportunity for them to create their own Nutcracker-inspired dolls. I chatted with Artistic Director Angel Correa and also with Sarah Cooper, Director of Community Engagement, about this year's performances and the unique place the Nutcracker holds in American holiday traditions.
It's a combination of everything. I think the combination of the music, the sets, the story of values of, you know, of love and youth and when you're young and that you have all your dreams in front of you and they become almost a reality for Marie or Clara in some other versions. I think that that's what it makes all of us dream and feel like, you know, if you're a kid, definitely feel like you're a part of the story. And if you're an adult, to go back to being a kid and feeling like you're, you know, like you're reliving all of that hope and love and future and everything that it comes with a holiday that we all have sort of, it comes into our hearts, the sharing and loving with friends. It all sort of like comes out of us and it just, it's all together in one show of an hour and a half and it just brings you back to all those memories.
It's about dreams, and you see the children in the story, believing Marie, being literally, you know, going and walking through her dreams. And I think everyone kind of universally connects with that.
Well, Pennsylvania Ballet in particular does the Balanchine Nutcracker. What gives that production the extra cachet? What makes it something that, especially in Pennsylvania Ballet's case, you want to go to year after year and present that particular version?
Well, I think that the way that Balanchine, Mr. Balanchine, played with the music and every choreography that he created, it was so creative and so unique that I think that it not only makes the story come alive, but also it keeps an energy going throughout the whole ballet, and it never gets to a moment where you actually get bored. So especially for younger kids, they see themselves reflected all the time in the first act, because there's a lot of kids also involved in the party scene. But also in the second act, he created the land of candy, and of course for a little kid to make those two of their favorite things, you know, the Christmas and candy. I think that was a genius move from Mr. Balanchine, and I think that that's what it makes it so special for everyone. It's just that for 1.5 hours, you don't stop dreaming. You keep seeing wonderful choreography, the way that Mr. Balanchine used it here, and especially with snow and flowers. It was incredible. But I think it's more about the feeling of the whole piece and how sort of involves you with the choreography and with the music, that you start feeling like you're part of what is happening on stage.
Well, certainly the Pennsylvania Ballet is rooted in the Balanchine tradition. To your knowledge, has there ever been or could you ever see discussions about perhaps doing a different version of the Nutcracker?
It's never even become a thought about doing it any different other version. I don't think that our audience are tired yet of our Nutcracker, of Balanchine's Nutcracker. I think that if in the future we see that people were demanding something different, then maybe we will have a different thought. But I think not only the tradition is the Nutcracker, but also Balanchine's Nutcracker. So I think it's really important that we keep that tradition. And sometimes it's when something is working, you don't really need to think of anything else. I mean, it's something that it gets better, and every season we see the house more and more full, if it's possible. Last year, we even have to open a side of the theater that usually never sells for dance because it's visible. It's really restricted because you have columns in front. And even with that, people bought the tickets and they were looking around the columns to try to follow everything that was going on stage. So it is a great ballet that I don't think that is going anywhere soon.
One way that you have expanded recently is by adding the sensory-friendly productions. I understand last year was the first year. How did that go, and how do you approach that as you're preparing both dancer from the production, the dancer side, but also the overall house side of it?
Last year, it was actually quite fun to have the process of telling everyone, all the dancers, to have them warned that they were going to be the house lights, they were going to be not all the way down, they were not going to be completely black, so you will be able to actually see the audience, that if they heard any kind of noise or anything happening from the house, to be okay, that nothing was going on, that nothing was wrong, that it was a special show, that we wanted to include families that sometimes they don't have the opportunity to go as a family all together to the theater and to be able to enjoy, you know, a show and connect with each other and share, like, all that experience with each other. So it was actually an amazing experience. We thought that there were going to be a lot of noise from the house, and it was actually the opposite. We had very quiet. Everyone was incredibly, paying incredible attention to what was going on. It was such an amazing experience of how they actually appreciated to be in a different environment, to see something that brought them something to their lives that sometimes they can only see at home in the privacy of their home. So it was a wonderful experience that not only the audience, they actually got to share with them, but also for the dancers to see that kind of appreciation from everyone, really, during that show was actually very heartwarming. I think that sometimes we take by granted how important it is for certain people to experience the arts and how important it is to connect with human beings in a soulful way, and to be able to do it that way and to have it so clear, the response, it was actually quite humbling.
I think we were really, Pennsylvania Ballet was really proud to have a sensory-friendly production. We partner with ArtReach to do our accessible programming, and they're really the experts in accessibility and have kind of taught us and continue to teach us. So it's lovely in terms of the company giving back to all audiences, all the different types of people throughout the city, and also from the organization to be able to partner with another organization, and both of us really, with our own expertise, be able to share with one another.
One other way in which the performances are really brought out to reach the community is the partnership with the Philadelphia Parks and Recreation. I understand that's been going on for a while, but tell us a little bit about how that program works.
Parks and Recreation, we've been partnering with for a long time, and we work with their Department of Visual Arts. And the idea is that anyone who is attending programming at a recreation center, a city recreation center, can do and create a doll inspired by a Nutcracker. So we get various characters, you know, the favorites, Marie, obviously, Mouse King is always a huge favorite. We get a lot of Mouse Kings. And it's really a chance for kids to express themselves through the visual arts and tie into the inspiration of the Nutcracker. And then from there, 20 of the top winners are displayed at the Academy. And why I think, you know, again, why we like it is it's a collaborative effort. So it's Pennsylvania Ballet doing what we do well, and Parks and Rec doing what they do well, and then coming together to really allow children's art to be displayed, and then couple that with a ticket giveaway where then they can come and see the Nutcracker. Honestly, it's just cool to see the creations that people make. I mean, there's some fabulous artists out there.
I remember I had spent several years in Russia, and I remember the one time in St. Petersburg that I went to see the Nutcracker was actually in the middle of the summer. And to me, that was a different. And, you know, Angel, I'm looking for looking at the international side of things. As you mentioned, this really has become an American holiday tradition. From an international perspective, how does the perception and how does the appearance of the Nutcracker in the repertory season differ from what we've come really to expect in America?
I think actually the rest of the world is starting to catch up, and I think that other countries are starting to see how important it is, the Nutcracker, for most American companies, American dance companies. So they're starting to put it in their calendars as well. Growing up in Spain, actually, I never heard of the Nutcracker. I mean, I heard of the music of the Nutcracker, but it was not a popular ballet. Well, first of all, because there's not a ballet company in Spain, but also because there was not that much of a tradition. I started to actually follow up more when I joined American Ballet Theatre in 1995, and I saw it for the first time, and everyone was already, especially the dancers, they were already sick of the music because they've done already, like, I don't know, a million Nutcrackers in their lives. And I was the fresh one that coming in and loving every single second and every single passage of the Nutcracker, and everyone was just hating me for that. I think that now more and more different companies around the world, they're seeing that kind of warmth that brings to people during Christmas, and there's more people doing it. In Germany, there's a bit more of a tradition about it. Russia sometimes, but in Western Europe, it wasn't a very strong tradition, and now it's starting to become one. But I think that like any other holiday, we're copying Americans. Like now you're starting to see Thanksgiving, which is a very strange thing. Halloween. There's a lot of traditions that we are actually adopting from America that eventually they just get to the whole world. And there's always a good reason for celebration.
That was my conversation with Angel Correa, Artistic Director at the Pennsylvania Ballet, and Sarah Cooper, Director of Community Engagement. Their Nutcracker performances run from December 8th to December 31st at the Academy of Music. More information can be found at paballet.org. I hope you enjoy these conversations that I bring you about the changing dynamics in the arts world every week on Odd Tempo. But remember, programs like this are made possible only through your support of this station. To become a member of the Classical Network, now celebrating 35 years on the air, go to wwfm.org and click on Donate. Thank you for being a member of the global listening community that is the Classical Network. Thank you for joining me for Odd Tempo. I'm your host and producer, Rachel Katz. You can find an archive of recent shows anytime on our webcast page at wwfm.org. Join me next week for another look at the challenges and innovations facing the world of the performing arts. Odd Tempo is a production of the Classical Network and is made possible by the support of the listener members of the Classical Network.